This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. You are listening to an edited recording from our series of webinars presented by AIA. This is our seventh webinar on looking after your mental health during COVID-19.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to BFM's Health and Living Weekly Webinar Series. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, and this is, of course, the seventh of the weekly series, and is made possible by our presenting sponsor, AIA Berhad. During this COVID-19 pandemic, there are a lot of mental health issues to deal with, including feeling lonely or isolated, or the stress of working from home, or feeling worried about your health, the anxieties of getting by on less income. So whichever aspect of this that you are dealing with, most of us could use some coping mechanisms to get through I think what has been a pretty tough year for all of us. So to answer your questions, we do have with us Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, who is a consultant psychiatrist from University Malaya Medical Center. And if you have questions for him, do post your questions in the comments below or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Amir.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So just to kick things off, Doctor, we've had a poll up on Twitter and Instagram since earlier today, and we were asking our listeners, our audience, how would you describe your mental and emotional state during this pandemic? And, something like 59 to 60% of the respondents said that they were feeling stressed and anxious. The remainder said that they were feeling calm. But, that's actually something that lines up pretty well with a survey by a local think tank as well, The Center, where they found that nearly 50% of respondents have been reporting experiencing negative emotions over the MCO period. So I was just wondering if you could elaborate for us how our mental well-being has been affected by the pandemic.
Well, first of all, I was also involved with that study by the center, and you're exactly right. And I think the polls show us a little bit of a signal of what's been happening during the last few months, particularly between March and May. So what we've noticed, at least on the ground, is that a number of people have been expressing issues with stress, anxiety, and also depression. And the main symptoms at that point was actually anxiety and sleep disturbances. So this is what we noted in our poll. More importantly, on the ground as well, on the clinical side, we also noted that a number of people have come forward, despite the fact that at that point of time, we were under the MCO, the full MCO, with mainly anxiety symptoms on the start. So I think what people are sharing on Twitter, which is a bit of a representation of what's been happening over that period, is also like we saw during that period of the MCO. So it's something that we take note of, and we've also seen the consequences where people are coming forward with symptoms now at the moment.
If we could take a little bit of a big picture view first, could you help us understand and maybe make a distinction between mental well-being, which is the sort of day-to-day stress or anxieties, versus mental health disorders?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, I think we've got to take even a step back from that and just define health in itself. So, you know, when we talk about health, often people are reflecting on the fact that people are physically healthy. Now, what people might not know is that health actually includes three components. One is the physical health, which we often talk about. Second is going to be about your social well-being, you know, how you actually communicate and be part of society. Now, the third part, which is often forgotten, is that people need to have good mental health or good mental well-being in order to also be classified as healthy. So if you have one of these three components which are not in sync, therefore the individual can actually be defined as being unhealthy. So the first thing when we look at mental health and mental well-being, what is the definition of that? So a good mental health situation is when an individual, number one, is able to handle their stress and anxiety well. They're able to manage that quite well with whatever skills and ability that they have. The second is that they're able to achieve their full potential because they're mentally healthy at that point of time. They're also able to work productively and they're able to contribute back to society. So if one of these elements are actually in sync, this individual is said to be having a mental health issue. It's not a mental disorder because they're probably just having a bit of a setback, and the component is not related to physical and social well-being. Therefore, this person is said to, you know, be dealing with some mental health issues. Now, if the function starts to reduce, where the individual is unable to perform his or her duties as part of a member of the family, the workforce, the community, then if the symptoms are, you know, prolonged or sustained and other symptoms come up, then that person is classified as having, in a way, a mental illness. So in a mental illness, the individual is unable to function, cannot get out of this particular situation on their own and requires some level of intervention or support.
Now, mental well-being, of course, doesn't exist just in isolation. And this is something that's, I think, become even more obvious in the last few months over the course of the MCO because of the pandemic, because it is related with social factors. Could you help us understand how these factors impact and relate to us when it comes to taking care of our mental health? You know, maybe we can start with something like income and employment.
Yeah, I think you've got to remember, during this period of time, number one, as you mentioned, we're in an unprecedented situation where things have really changed and things are still evolving at this point of time. We're hearing lots of noise and news about things that are looking like it's, you know, getting better, and then suddenly it's just gotten worse. So if you take into these factors on board, there are many aspects of the psychosocial issues that have resulted in us having some mental distress during this whole period of the last months. So the first thing is going to go back to the issue of the pandemic. You know, this word itself was not really something that we were familiar with or very much familiar with, say, in January of 2020. It's only really become, you know, in the lingo since probably around April when we went through the MCO. In fact, the MCO itself was never actually something that we are familiar with until probably around that time. So these changes in these words itself causes some level of anxiety to people who might not be familiar with them. Now, if we add on the fact that we all had to go into a lockdown situation for at least about 2 months, where individuals were isolated depending on where they were, because remember, if you remember, on the 16th of March, it was actually the school holidays. So yes, some individuals went back balik kampung, and then eventually ended up stuck in some other place that wasn't the plan in the first place because they couldn't rush back home by the 18th when they were not allowed to. So therefore, there were pockets of people who were either isolated in the cities or in their villages who probably wanted to get back, but they didn't know that this would only end about 2.5 months later. Now, of course, at the same time, when you do that, if mom went off somewhere for work and was unable to come back, or dad was stuck somewhere else, then you've got families that were actually isolated. And what we noticed during that period of time, that there was a lot of people that were living in isolations, particularly the elderly. And of course, this was a state of mental health that they might have not been ready for at the beginning of the year. And this sort of sustained. So you're right that the environment plays a part. Now, as we moved on with this COVID situation, we've seen lots of changes. There are people who have lost their jobs along the way. And this is where the financial health of individuals get affected. We've also noticed that people are worried that they might not have a job. And there are people who still have a job, but seeing people left and right losing their jobs, wondering when is their turn. So again, this doesn't augur well in terms of maintaining some level of mental health. Remember, I told you that the mental health is good when they're able to manage the stress. But as you can hear from this conversation already, there are many aspects that are causing us to feel stressful. Living arrangements, employment arrangements, interactions, and we're now knowing in this what they call the new norm, where things are evolving, where, you know, you're going into shops and you've got to scan, you've got to check the temperature, you're always worried that the temperature is going to be high. So there are lots of changes around that for some people, they might not be able to handle it quite well, and therefore they will might or might not have some mental health issues as a result.
So on that note about feeling stressed, we actually just got a WhatsApp. I don't know who the person's name is, but they're saying, when I'm feeling stressed, there are people who tell me, oh, don't get so stressed, everything will be fine. I appreciate that they're trying to make me feel better, but I don't find it helpful. Is there a right thing to say to someone when they're feeling stressed or down about something?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, this is where we launched last year, the Ministry of Health, the Let's Talk Minda Sehat program, and TALK Talk actually has one of the tips for all of us here who might be dealing with individuals who are in a way asking us. So T is actually telling someone about a problem. That's good. You're asking, you know, telling somebody a problem. A is asking for help. But L is where I think the advice comes in, is listening without judgment. where, you know, if you're a friend who has been told about another friend's issue, or a family member is telling you that they're struggling, I think the first thing is not to react to it, but actually to listen without judgment, because individuals sometimes are just ventilating their concerns and issues without really wanting an answer. But if you did have to provide an answer and you felt that this person needed some help, now key of the talk is actually know where to find that help. And some of that help could be simply a referral to our friends at Befrienders, for example, who are able to, you know, help you with the issue by listening actively. Or if that person needs further intervention, then they could be referred to, you know, whatever service that are available in the country.
So speaking of ways of coping, I suppose, you know, many of us have been turning to the digital world over the last few months or so, you know, the internet, social media, video calls, as a way to cope with the pandemic, as a way to cope with the lockdowns. How does this impact our mental well-being?
Well, you know, this, you know, even before the pandemic, Sharmila, we were talking about the positive, the pros and cons of digital media. And of course, using digital time. And what we've noticed is that because of the pandemic, people who are not very familiar with the digital circumstances or the technology that's available suddenly became overnight experts, because, I mean, we were all literally at home for long periods of time. So if you didn't know how to use Zoom, you probably know how to use Zoom. If you didn't know there's such a thing called Facebook, suddenly you might suddenly realize that there is something called Facebook. But what some of us might not be, what we're not prepared for is the consequence of this extra time that we were on these digital platforms. And we've seen in the number of cases and been reported elsewhere that as a result of the pandemic and also the result of our time on digital platforms, that if you didn't have a plan and you're not familiar with the do's and don'ts, the pros and cons, you might get stuck. And the first thing would be issues with regards to cyberbullying, for example, or being in a situation where some of your comments, if you're putting it on social media, suddenly becomes viral without you expecting it to be, and as a result of that, having to deal with the consequences of it. Secondly, of course, for some of us who might be struggling with other issues, like, I don't know, things like addiction, for example, you might be introduced to methods that might you might have trouble with. Because I've had a number of cases, particularly as you've mentioned just now, where finances became a problem, that as they had time on the internet, they suddenly realized there's something called online gaming. And this is not the gaming that is positive, it's actually the negative part of it. And some of them have actually become, have had problems with it during this period of time.
We'll be back after a short break. Stay tuned for more from the Health and Living webinar series by AIA. Don't go anywhere, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. You're listening to an edited recording from our series of webinars presented by AIA.
Now, the word stress has come up several times already in this conversation. What is the effect of long-term stress on us, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally? What does that look like in terms of, you know, how it manifests in our behavior or in our physical health?
Okay, so first of all, I think we've got to take note that there's something called positive stress, and of course, there's something called negative stress. And we need stress. Stress is normal. So basically, stress is actually a change, you know, a change in environment or a change in the norm where an individual has a reaction. Now, the reaction is required at the early stages in order for us to be motivated. I mean, most of us have gone through some level of deadlines, whether you're in school, in college, or even at work, where at the very beginning, when you're given a task, knowing that a task is going to be ending in a week's time, you might actually feel quite relaxed. But as it's closer to the time of delivery, you'll start to feel some level of motivation because you're starting to feel some level of stress. So you need to maintain that level of stress to be able to get that job done. But the ones that we're talking about is going to be the prolonged stress where the threshold has been reached and we're starting to have negative consequences of it. So going back to your question, physically, you're going to feel tired. You're going to feel you might have anxiety that is uncontrolled. Because if you can recall, if you've got to submit something tomorrow, if not nothing at all, you might actually be unable to manage the kind of feeling. So you might be sweating, you might have headaches, you might have increased blood pressure, pulse rate, for example. So that's just anxiety symptoms of stress. Now, the emotional symptoms of it will be anxiety as the feeling of concern You might actually have mood changes. You might become a little bit more angrier than normal. And of course, the social aspects would be that you might actually not come to work, for example, behavioral aspects of it as well. So these are some of the negative consequences of stress. Now, we know from research that prolonged stress can cause physical issues like cardiovascular problems, blood pressure problems. And of course, for the mental health issues, it can actually lead to anxiety disorders and particularly depression as well if an individual has prolonged stress. And that's why it's really important for us to manage our stress well.
So speaking of managing stress, we've actually got a couple of comments. One on Twitter who said that they shop online a lot as a way of dealing. We had someone who has a question on WhatsApp who's asking, is it okay to relieve stress through things like retail therapy or snacking? I wonder as well.
Well, I think that there's something called positive coping and maladaptive coping. So maybe for if you're not in a situation where you've got prolonged stress, then often snacking and, for example, retail therapy might help. But if the stress situation is actually prolonged, then you can imagine that these forms of coping might not be actually as helpful as you think they are. I think there are more positive ways for us to manage stress. I think what's more important is to ensure that the ways that we cope are varied and increased, so that as you are thrown various aspects of stressful situations or triggers, as some might call it, you're able to respond to it quite well.
So Dr. Amir, just to sort of talk about what this means in terms of the long term, everyone is talking about mental health crisis actually being the invisible epidemic alongside of COVID-19, just because of how many people it is going to impact. What does mental health crisis actually mean?
So, when we talk about the mental health crisis, I'm also of the opinion that we might be going through that, particularly because there are lots of signals that things are not as great as we would like it to be. And this is not something that some of us in Malaysia have also thought about, but we've also seen lots of reports in the UK, the US, and also Australia. So the mental health crisis that they were particularly concerned about is the fallout from the economic crisis as a result of COVID and the consequences of prolonged isolations, especially in countries who are consistently in lockdown. Because they've noticed that anxiety and depression rates have increased. And as a result of the decline in financial stability in some of these individuals, or most of these individuals within communities, they've had other issues as well that have come up. So the ones that have been often related is the increased rate of people harming themselves. Now, Australia was one of the first few countries that I remember somewhere around April reading, it was Professor Ian Hickey, particularly in Australia, who was talking a lot about the epidemic of mental health leading to increase in suicides. I think about 2 or 3 days ago, there was a recent commission or report that came out from Melbourne, which said that thankfully now in the fourth quarter of the year, they've not seen that rise. We are still quite cautious. There was a report, there was a paper that was written in Lancet Psychiatry by colleagues, particularly a suicide colleague group, where one of my own friends, Dr. Chan Lai Fong from UKM, was part of the authorship, where they were concerned, again, with the COVID increasing issues with mental health because of finance. And they actually made a call that countries, particularly lower middle income and middle income countries, should be preparing themselves with things like hotlines to be able to cater to individuals that might be feeling distressed, by actually supporting employment among them, which I think we have done as a country. But I think what we are still waiting to see is whether the predictions do come true. And we really will be able to see whether there's going to be a problem probably in the fourth quarter, if not the first quarter of next year. But in saying that, our colleagues in the Ministry of Health have actually, I think, done some preparations. If you remember, there was something called the Talian Kasih that they were shouting out quite a bit during the COVID-15999. And I remember that we were also asking people to call Befrienders if we had a problem. So these kind of services have continued. You might not know it, but even though we are currently in the recovery MCO, those services are still being continued. Those 15 NGOs that are participating together with the Ministry of Health are still manning those numbers. So for some of you here who might be struggling, if you call 1599 or you're able to call the CRC number, you can actually get access to this mental health support if you need it.
I do want to move on to talking about how to cope with mental health struggles and issues. However, just very quickly before we do, what does it mean for us in a larger societal sense when so many people don't have access to mental health care or might not want to access it or feel comfortable accessing it, even if they do?
Yeah, well, I think this is where we really have a lot of work still to do. You know, I think the good thing about the pandemic, if there's a good thing from it to me, is that at least the mental health aspects of health have suddenly been recognized. I have not remembered a time in my lifetime, I'm not that old, nor that young either, but I can't remember a period of time, at least in Malaysia, where we really talked about mental health from various aspects. And this has been the period where I think we've got the most exposure in actually caring for your mental health. Now, we understand that because of the demand as a result of the issues that we are facing and the predicted demand, that we really need to increase services. And this is where the services, there are groups of pockets of groups and NGOs and individuals that are now talking to relevant stakeholders in increasing the mental health services, whether it is to see a counselor, whether it is to see a psychologist, whether it is to see the medical doctor because of mental health, whether you need to see somebody at a service center like a clinic, or whether you go and telecounseling or telepsychiatry, for example. I think this particular pandemic has opened up many opportunities for us to reach out to those who are actually requiring some extra help, which we probably did not think about before March of this year.
So we have a WhatsApp in from someone about they're concerned that they're developing an anxiety disorder. But I just want to expand that a little bit to ask, you know, in general, how do we manage mental health disorders such as anxiety or depression and so on in a time of COVID-19 so that they're not made worse by it?
I think first of all, you know, if you're just dealing with the symptoms of mental health issues, the one we talked about at the very beginning, there are lots of things that we can do to actually either minimize or even reduce that risk. The first thing, particularly in a situation like what we're in right now, COVID-19, there's just so much unpredictable situations. So having a routine really central, keeps you grounded in what's going on, because there's so many things that we cannot control. You know, there's going to be an announcement, I think, today, where we're not sure whether the MCO is lifted or whether there's going to be a new MCO, for example. Things like this is beyond our control. What we can control is what we do day to day, what we do in the moment where we are at. And I think having that control itself is a form of managing the stress that we're dealing with. That's the first thing. The second one is to also be mindful about our emotions and understand that we are going to go through many types of emotions. And therefore, ensuring that you're sleeping well is really vital, because if there's going to be a non-medication evidence-based method to actually manage anxiety and depression or mood disorders, it's going to be sleep, making sure that you sleep well. And we know that most of us here have been having some trouble of sleep. I think there was a study actually that was actually shared that Malaysians don't do very well in terms of sleep. So be the guy that does the good thing and actually sleep quite regularly. That's the second thing. The third thing is also, you know, AIA, I remember, talked quite a bit about the lack of exercise among Malaysians. Now, again, exercise is also another thing that we can control. These are things that we can control, that we know will improve or reduce the rates of getting depression and anxiety. So having a regular exercise, and often they say about 120 minutes per week is all you sort of need, at least the minimum. So putting a regular program for yourself is actually quite vital. And the fourth one to me is actually managing what we call self-care, activities that you actually enjoy. More importantly, activities you actually enjoy that you actually do. Because if you think about it, right, if you told
yourself, don't do a lot of them.
Yeah, if you told yourself Monday, for example, I'm going to be exercising sometime this week and you didn't put it in, there's a high possibility you didn't do it. It's Friday already. Yeah, you've got 2 days to sort of cover it. So, you know, I want to read a book, and some of us here are trying to literally do, you know, 9 months worth of work in the next 3 months, literally. So you'll be probably flagging off on reading. So again, you've got to really put in the self-care in your daily schedule or your weekly schedule to ensure that you're doing it, because it's actually a pause in the busy time that you're having. Of course, self-care can be spiritual self-care for some of you here who actually feel that's really important, is actually taking that step back and reflecting or meditating or praying for some of you here. So it's really a part and parcel of actually managing your stress during this period of so much unpredictability.
So actually, this is a very important question that comes through Facebook. Mental health services like therapy can be expensive here, and it's not easy for younger working adults to go for therapy because they can't afford it. Where are the options available that they can access, especially outside of KL?
Well, I want to correct that, because you know there's lots of work now being done to actually make it a bit more affordable. And again, affordability is quite subjective. To be fair. First of all, our mental health care in the Ministry of Health is actually quite affordable. You might be accessing, say, a doctor, but eventually you might be referred down to the counselors or the psychologist. So that's the first thing. So as you know, I don't have to share with you how much it costs to see a medical doctor in a public hospital, for example, or access public health care in Malaysia. It's extremely affordable. But for some of us here who might not want to go all the way to see, you know, these people in the hospitals, there are non-governmental organizations that actually provide counseling services for a very minimum fee. And I'm pretty sure that if you do see some of our counseling service in private, if you're really having some trouble, you might actually also be given some support by them as well. But Souls Health, for example, is one group of non-governmental organization that actually helps quite a bit in providing counseling services for a fee, a small fee. MIASA is another one, another NGO that's quite famous. Malaysian Mental Health Association as well also have this particular service. And although these are the ones I mentioned in Kuala Lumpur, but there are also services out there in the non-KL area that are also quite helpful. Now, for some of you that are living in cities or states which have what they call a Mentari, a community mental health service run by the Ministry of Health, you can also receive some level of support from them, and again, quite affordable rates. Now, there are also now, as I mentioned just now, because of the COVID experience, technology has now been quite an important part. So I'm aware that Relate Malaysia, Naluri, another initiative done by Azran Rani's group, have also got telecounseling. And some of the private hospitals also have provided telepsychiatry for individuals who might not be able to physically come to the hospital. And again, the prices might vary. So you might want to check it out, but it's not as expensive as you might think it is.
So one question that's come through on Facebook, there are supplements in the market that helps to relieve stress. Are these supplements helpful?
So the evidence is not suggestive of any supplement, actually, Sharmila. But the way I always say it, if you've got too much money, it's not going to be harmful for you. If you're talking about vitamins, I'm not talking about those kind of supplements that, those other kind of supplements. But if you're talking about vitamins, of course, there are some studies that suggest that some vitamins might help, mental health as a whole. But to me personally, if you're eating right, then there shouldn't be a problem. And if you have too much money, that could be something that you might want to invest in as well.
One question here through WhatsApp about children. How do I tell whether my child isn't coping well with what's going on, especially given that they've been skipping school for so many months and not being able to play normally with their friends?
We have questions all over the place, isn't it?
I know.
Twitter. Thank you, everyone, for those questions. So this children situation, I think, is something that is worth mentioning, Sharmila. What I've noticed especially as well, is that children are not coping as well as we think they are during this whole period. And we're talking about the young children and also the young adolescents. Now, the first step that mom and dad particularly need to be mindful of is the change of behavior that your child is exhibiting. There's going to be certain warning signs that you might want to be concerned about. Sudden isolation, for example, sudden mood fluctuations, a person who's actually quite calm suddenly becoming quite aggressive or very argumentative, you might want to ask them if things are okay. The reason I say this is because, as I mentioned just now, when we talked about the digital situation, most of our kids that might not have been on digital platforms for very long because we controlled it, we are unable to control it during this period of time because lots of teaching and learning material are actually online. Now, I know with all certainty, most of parents are actually watching their children. But of course, once you've given them a tablet or a laptop or a computer, there's a tendency that you're assuming that they're actually working on it for schoolwork. But they might actually be involved in other activities, which might also cause some level of mental distress for them, which we can see as parents in the change of behavior that they're exhibiting. So again, like I said, mood changes, behavioral changes, sleep pattern changes are also quite important, and some warning signs that you might want to actually ask your son and daughter whether things are okay.
We are running out of time, unfortunately, but I thought it would be good to wrap with, because there are lots of questions about coping mechanisms. So I'd like to divide those into two. One is, what can we do now in the near future to sort of mitigate the effect of chronic stress on mental health? But also, what can we do in the long term, given that the future looks so unpredictable?
Well, I think, first of all, like I said, we really need to, number one, identify or at least acknowledge that health includes mental health. I think that's the first thing. Why I say that is because lots of us deny it. Therefore, there's going to be stigma and some confusion or misconception about the need for you to maintain your mental health. So at least acknowledging that mental health is part of health is the first step. The second thing is that we've got to acknowledge that everybody has different resilience or coping mechanisms or ability to cope considering the situation. Why this is important? Because then we become a little bit more empathetic towards those who are struggling. And also we are being mindful that we might be doing okay at this point of time, but we do not know if we're going to falter as the situation becomes prolonged. You know, if I share with you that WHO predicts that the COVID situation is now going to be not 1 year, but maybe 2 years, it's already quite daunting for all of us that we might now be quite okay, but moving on along the months, we might not be okay. So those are the first two things. Now, evidence has shown that those who are able to, number one, do increased physical activities, increase self-care, ensure that sleep hygiene is done, and the last one is actually eating right, have actually done quite well in the long term in managing their stress. Now, we know that for the immediate issue, like I mentioned just now, having a routine actually helps. Now, the other two that you probably want to take note of is being or having some method to relax. So the one that I've also often been mentioned is something called mindfulness. But the one that I've always advocated is actually at least mastering deep breathing exercises as a way to relax. So it doesn't really matter what that particular mechanism is. It's what's most important is for you to actually have one, because you've identified that mental health is important for you. Now, the last one is actually having what we call meaningful engagements. So I think some of us have thought about it when we were in having our downtime during this COVID, where we reflected and saw, you know, now I've got all this time that I'm not rushing to do things. What is actually quite meaningful for me? I think as we go back into the new norm, you want to step back again and ask yourself again, what is meaningful for you, and actually engaging those things that are actually meaningful for you. Because, you know, these are the things that actually, number one, reduce the stress. Number two, make the situation a bit more bearable, because you actually know why you're in and what you're doing because of it.
And long term, which, you know, for a lot of us seems a little hazy.
Well, yeah. So the long term aspect, again, is to prepare yourself in terms of these aspects. And I think most importantly is to continue doing it. I think I was hearing BFM just now, and they were saying that people had a lot of predictions of what they're going to do. And now in August, you know, most of those dreams have actually crashed. You know, you wanted to save more money, but you spent a little bit more. You know, you wanted to exercise and you decided you didn't want to do it anymore. You wanted to eat right and take care of your health. So I think the long term is actually trying to do the sleep, the exercise, the self-care on a continuous fashion. And of course, to me, reflecting back on all of this consistently is also quite useful in order for us to get through this long struggle with COVID-19.
Thank you so much, Dr. Amir.
You've been listening to an edited recording from our series of Health and Living webinars presented by AIA. If you missed any part of this show, you can download the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app You can also watch the webinars on BFM's Facebook page at facebook.com/BFM Radio under videos. This has been Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.